News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a story from the BBC News website read by Corey Caulfield.
Football's governing body FIFA has banned international matches from being played at more than 2,500 metres above sea level. The ruling was greeted with dismay in Bolivia, where games are played in La Paz, 3,600 metres above sea level. Bolivia's president, Evo Morales, vowed to lead a campaign against the ban, saying he would send a high-level delegation to meet with FIFA.
And our thanks to Andy from Taunton for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Fred McCauley and Mark Steele. And opposite them on my left, Andy Zoltzman and Alan Corran. Fred, who have reinvented themselves as the heir to Blair?
I'm guessing it's the Conservatives.
It is.
It rhymes nicely, doesn't it? Heir to Blair. I was thinking what David Cameron could do while Tony Blair's on his farewell goodwill tour of friendly nations and not so friendly nations, otherwise it'd be a quick tour. He could just have slipped into number 10 and phoned Gordon Brown and said, Gordon, can you come round? It's the PM here. And Gordon would come in just a wee bit confused. And Cameron could just have pretended he was Tony Blair. And he just has William Hague in the corner, kind of roughed up, pretending that he's John Reid. A fake Scottish accent. And just say, look, Gordon, I know you're still bleating on about that dinner we had in Islington and you want a shot at Prime Minister, but now's not the right time. And Gordon would just have kind of gone, aye, right. Everything okay, Gordon? But you changed your hair. It's the Tories.
It's Osborne, actually, isn't it?
It's
Shafty Osborne that I met a long time ago at Peter Lilly's in one of those evenings where you're not entirely sure of anybody's sexuality. That's the hard way. They're all 38% of something, but not everything of everything, and I felt a bit uneasy in my heavy tweed jacket. Anyway, Gail Lilly, his missus, introduced Osborne 7 years ago as the next Prime Minister. Cameron wasn't heard of, and I think Osborne is going to lie there like a George Brown time bomb, simmering. And I think that's the hinterland of his comments this week. He's saying, we will carry on where Blair left off, and that's the way of shafting Brown, which is a very strange thing for him to do.
Quite interesting tactical move from the Conservatives to try and take over the mantle of one of the most unpopular leaders this country's ever had. It seems a rather counterintuitive way of that going to win over the 78% of voters who didn't vote for Blair last time.
Yeah, but if you can't think of any policies, then the quickest route is to take over somebody else's, isn't it? That seems to be the way forward.
It worked for Blair.
According to Shadow Chancellor George Osborne, the Conservative Party would be better than Labour at continuing Tony Blair's public service reforms. Mr Osborne accused Gordon Brown of lurching to the left, although to be fair, there's an awful lot of room on that side of him for lurching. Osborne claimed that a Brown government would be hell-bent on removing public choice, a claim hotly denied by our future unelected Prime Minister. Mark, have a listen to this. Whose foul mouth has fallen foul of the censors?
Alistair Campbell has a diary that was going to be coming out sometime soon, but it's got all sorts of swearing in it, and so it's not going to come out after all because he's being lent on by various people for it not to come out.
It's going to be a wonderful book because every third word, if it's going to be Blair, it's going to be an asterisk. You have to sit there and try and work it out. And I always love that about asterisks because you always count, don't you? Nine? The most interesting thing about a lot of political memoirs is wondering what these dots mean.
Sometimes they just put in one asterisk. I saw Billy Connolly describing Braveheart as a pile of SH asterisk TE.
Could it be?
I'm disappointed in Campbell over betraying trust. He seemed like such a nice guy. Just didn't seem like the kind of guy that would do that. Very disappointing.
It's been a shock.
The country might turn against him now.
Actually, I've got a quick supplementary question on this area. Whose farewell tour has been all in vain?
It's the wonderful Blair. He'd been made a chief of peace in Sierra Leone. And enables him to sit in the Sierra Leone government. And you think, they must be quaking in their bloody shoes.
You see him smiling with Gaddafi. There was a picture of him smiling with Gaddafi. Now, Gaddafi was part of the state-sponsored terror Axis of Evil not long ago. So the Axis of Evil must be like when you've got a bad credit card rating. You can ring up and get taken off it, perhaps. It was the robes, wasn't it? That's the thing in Sierra Leone, is you've got this sort of big African robe on, which he looked so proud of. Look at me, I'm the king of Sierra Leone, I came to save you, and I've got a big robe on. And it's a very arrogant British thing, that we do that, whereas if an African leader comes over here, we wouldn't say, well, I think it's very important that we dress them up in the traditional British dress and make them wear a pair of shorts and have big fat red calves.
Yes, we have two stories about Mr. Blair. First of all, Alistair Campbell's long-awaited diaries, The Blair Years, due to be published after Tony steps down as Prime Minister. It turns out that they have been heavily edited. They are thought to be the most scandalous political diaries since John Prescott's were translated into English. And Tony Blair's trip to Africa has been heavily criticised, extra point there for Alan, as a vanity tour. Amongst his various things he's been given in Sierra Leone, he now has formal power to resolve land disputes. To make a nice change from ignoring the collective will of the United Nations. Andy, what has given us cause to stop and question the powers that might be?
Was this the proposed extensions of stop and search to stop all the terrorists from blowing us up?
Stop anybody.
I don't think it's going to really affect me. I've taken the very sensible precaution of being white, so I think I'll probably get away with it. But I did find myself in a situation the other day. I was walking past Parliament, and I accidentally committed a terrorist-related crime. I was just playing a game of papers, scissors, stone with myself, and I accidentally flicked a V sign at Parliament with my scissors. So I thought that probably made me a terrorist. So I stopped and searched myself. You have to be self-regulating about these things. I found a copy of Wisden and a biscuit in the shape of the American flag. So I thought that was enough evidence to go on. So I then flew myself to Egypt and beat myself up a bit. It turned out I actually hadn't done anything wrong. But it just goes to show.
Hopeless, though, aren't they? I can't think of hardly anybody. You think of all the people you know who've ever been burgled, car robbed, all that. When do they ever find anyone? They'd be useless. Imagine if the fire service, for example, was like that. They'd never, ever put a fire out, but there were just a few houses that they'd hosed down by mistake.
To allow police to stop and question anyone in the UK under new anti-terror laws have been heavily criticised. The Northern Ireland Secretary Peter Haynes said care must be taken not to alienate whole communities. I don't know, I'll stick with what you're good at, Peter. Alan, who says it would be green to leave the green belt?
Yeah, great. I mean, it was Tuesday and then it was Thursday and the world changed again. Apparently, the best place to live to save the planet for all sorts of ecological reasons, health reasons, is in the middle of a filthy, dangerous inner city. Because you expend less energy, largely because you're scared to go out. But in the country, people go out. They breathe in and out. They fart and ruin the lower levels of the whatever sphere it is. They exercise wrongly. They drive cars a hell of a lot. They engage in country pursuits. The animals excrete, and all these things are very, very bad. And you stand in the middle of the New Forest, you're 10 times more likely to die of global warming than in the middle of Brixton. I didn't understand any of it. In fact, having just finished talking about it, I still understand even less. But it said it in the Daily Mail, and who am I to argue?
It's been a tough week for the environment, though. The most distressing thing about the Cutty Sark fire for me was the damage that that fire did to the environment, particularly as historical artefacts give out more CO2 than things of no real historical interest. So in fact, to offset the environmental damage of the Cutty Sark burning down, they are going to turn the Mary Rose into a hedgehog sanctuary. We're going to balance out.
As the housing market continues to overheat, the author, Martin Ince, has suggested that the best hope of saving the planet is for us all to live in cities because they're more energy efficient. Mr. Ince is, of course, famous for his work on the Wincy Spider. And its morbid fear of spouts.
I can't believe you've done an Incy Wincy Spider joke.
You know what's even worse is it went really well.
What happened to that spider when the rain came down?
It was washed out.
Oh, yeah. Right, that's right. Yeah.
Can't talk about it without crying.
Remember, up came the sun and dried up all the rain.
Well, thank God for that.
And then, incy-wincy spider went up the spout again.
Well, what an idiot. Never learned, did he?
So, at the end of round one, the scores are Fred and Mark have got 4 points, but Alan and Andy are in the lead with 7. And we start round two with a cutting from a Guardian article about a documentary on Beryl Bainbridge.
The film reveals how Bainbridge was put under doctor's orders to give up smoking or lose a leg, a 50-year habit she found hard to kick.
And our thanks to Brian Stedman for spotting that. Fred, why are motorists still not getting the point?
It's speeding, isn't it? And the motorists are the cops.
Points mean somebody else's.
Points mean prizes. Yes. You can get somebody to take your points for you.
Well, not legally, but yes.
No, but you can kind of see, yeah, my friend Brian was driving my car. Brian, who has no points and who is a student and needs a couple of hundred quid. And the cops, there's been tens of thousands of police who have been caught speeding. Police.
No, I just...
Police.
I think he's already spelled S-H-I-T with an unnecessary E on the end.
Swearing grammar. The new subject.
Anyway, tens of thousands of police,
yeah.
And only a very small percentage, I think about 0.3...
It's 354 out of 90,000 officers,
right,
caught speeding or driving through red lines, but have actually received any kind of punishment.
Because they have been able to come up with some good excuse for why they went through the red light or were speeding. Presumably they were on their way back from Hot Donut,
yeah,
with the sergeant's lunch.
Yeah. Rushing to catch the start of the bill, that kind of thing.
Yeah. They didn't get back there in time, big trouble. Actually, just before I go on, if any of you ever want a nice cheap night out, get a very cheap flash gun, £4.99, and just stand beside a set of traffic lights at night, and when a car goes past, flash it off like that. Oh God, that wasn't red, that was green. I've got one in the car, it works off the cigarette lighter. It's great. If somebody overtakes me, stuff them.
Do you live in a particularly dull part of Glasgow? Yeah, one in 200 officers has been fined or given points, and not one held for 28 days without charge or pushed down some stairs.
My parents are getting my next set of points, because I think they have to take some responsibility for bringing me up to think that it's morally acceptable to drive 51 miles an hour in a 40 limit. So I think they've got to take the blame.
Give them your points. Yes. Happy birthday, Mum. Up to 500,000 motorists are swapping their 3-point speeding penalties with friends and family in order to avoid a ban. Point swapping is becoming harder to get away with as modern speed cameras take clearer pictures of the person behind the wheel and now also offer unlimited prints in poster size at a fraction of the cost at Boots.
I think the worst ones are the people driving the mobiles. I get all old and grumpy about that. Good with your mobile. And they go, oh, I can drive just as well with a mobile. And you think, of course you can't. And they're saying that while they're going through the swings and stuff like that. And they do that with anything. Oh, I can drive just as well while I'm playing golf with my right hand.
How long will it be before they ban sat-nav? Because we had a minicab driver, and I swear he was just watching the sat-nav, and the bloody car was wandering all over the road, because he wasn't actually watching the road. God, he sounds like the Daily Mail. It's going to be a lot more dangerous than being on the blower, though. It's even more dangerous when the fag drops between your legs when they're going. That's the real killer.
Well, I drove while talking my landline. That was pretty dangerous.
At least you didn't go far. Mark, who's made a very nice gesture and coughed up?
Champix.
Yes, it is.
Is this the smoking tablet?
Yeah.
Ah, right, yes. There's a tablet now that they've come up with which they think is going to be ready in time for when smoking's banned everywhere. And you take the tablet and then you stop smoking, apparently. That's not going to work, is it? How's that going to work?
One thing wrong with this tablet, it doesn't light. I mean, what I don't understand about smoking is it's sticking a thing in your mouth and setting fire to it. And tablets don't work. The real thing about this credit is that NICE have been making it available on the National Health, and it's, I think, £1.70 a time, but cancer drugs for about the same sort of price, or cancer palliatives are withheld and you've got to buy them privately. That's absolutely shocking, but they don't have any logic there at all. Because it is our old NewsQuiz friend Patricia Hewitt.
Yes, we love
at the
her.
Bottom of all this, and it's crazy.
Will office workers still go outside to take it?
Yeah. Do you not think it'd be cheaper just to wire everybody's mouths shut? You could tackle smoking and obesity in the one fell swoop.
We could have one cigarette in every packet that's a firework.
Champix, a new drug that claims a 44% success rate in helping smokers to quit, has been given draft approval for NHS prescription in time for the smoking ban due to come into force in England on the 1st of July. At the end of the 12-week drug trial, 44% of patients had successfully stopped smoking because they were dead. Actually, legal reasons, I point out that they weren't dead. Big Brother came back on TV, they wish they were. Alan, why might television have a stake in your kidney?
Oh, God, it's really unsavory in all sorts of ways. Don't know where to begin. It's a Dutch endemol. It's taken Big Brother or whatever it is a stage further in that a woman suffering from cancer, but her kidney's in decent shape, has offered to donate the kidney to one of three people who will vie for it. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they're three people with rough kidneys. There's not much they can do, really. They can't do a monocycle with a dialysis machine attached to it, I think. I don't know how unsavory this can get, but the three people actually need kidneys urgently in Holland, and the only way to get them is to be on television. The woman with cancer will choose which of them has her kidney. I mean, I don't really think there's a lot to say about that. I would almost rather watch Bruce Forsyth.
Our one's not much better, though. That's one that's just started again, because you know there's just going to be... They'll all turn out. One of them will be a transvestite, and one of them will be incontinent, and one of them will be dead, probably. Be their little novel one. 3:45, and Chantel is beginning to smell.
Have you ever been asked to be on one of those reality television?
I was asked to go on the Jungle one, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
What happened? I don't think I went on it.
Well, I've never seen it. I wouldn't know if you had. That's why I was asking. I know Fred did the singing one.
Yeah, I was asked to go in the Jungle one as well, and I refused to go, A, because I detest the word celebrity, and B, I'd been married 23 years, and I couldn't trust myself to be in the Jungle with somebody that looked like Mylene Klass cutting about in a bikini for 14 days. I would have been rogering it over the big log down at the fireplace, waving at all the cameras. My wife at home, Aileen, look at this, smiling class, eh? I've still got it. One up for the wee man, eh?
Is that what you wrote back to them?
I was asked to do the one about show jumping, the only fools on horses, and I said, I'll ring you straight back. And I laughed for about a week. And this is a new reality show in Holland made by the same Dutch television company as Big Brother. The show is called De Groot Dune Show, in which three chronically ill patients compete for phone votes to win a dying woman's kidney. Reality TV was pioneered in Holland, where it grew out of the ancient Dutch tradition of watching stoned people ride bicycles into canals. And at the end of round two, Fred and Mark have got 10 points, but Alan and Andy are just in the lead with 11. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from Der Spiegel.
The director of the Dutch zoo where the gorilla Bakito escaped last Friday has accused Berlin Zoo of bringing him up badly and said that it's going to have trouble with the pampered polar bear superstar Canute. Berlin denies spoiling its animals, but admits it took the gorilla out to a pizza restaurant once and let Canute play on a children's slide.
And our thanks to David Fern for spotting that. Fred, who's been cheating by name and cheating by nature?
The animal world, isn't it?
Yes.
Cheetahs. There's been a survey watching cheetahs' behaviour, and they've discovered that the female of the species puts it about a bit. They've discovered by doing DNA tests on the offspring that in one litter, the female had about 4 or 5 little cheetahs, and each had a different dad. It's like being in Ulrika Johnson's house.
Amazing creatures, though, aren't they? Cheetahs. I mean, did you know that a female cheetah can run 60 miles per hour on the flats? It's about half that on stilettos, but...
But if they're the fastest animal in the world and also the most promiscuous, there must be a lot of other startled animals out there, because a cheetah... couple of rabbits with roses in their cheeks. The cheetah's gone, you wouldn't even know, it's been and gone. But the male is slow. I have nothing against these very fast predatory females. I think it's... They've already got a fur coat. I have to do nothing. I just stand there.
They say it's for the evolution of the species. This is why this habit has arisen, which is quite an interesting excuse for infidelity. I do love you, darling, but you have to understand, I have a responsibility to my species.
Scientists from the Zoological Society of London have discovered that female cheetahs are regularly unfaithful to their partners, with almost half of all litters made up of cubs from different fathers. There are sound reasons why cheetahs mate with multiple males. It ensures their cubs are more genetically diverse and rockets them up the Serengeti Council's housing list. Andy, who is getting animated about having the Mickey taken out of them?
Disney.
Very, very good.
Disney. They've been criticised for portraying old people as being grumpy. 25% of old cartoon characters are grumpy, which is fair enough. If you're really old, you would be grumpy about being on the inevitable slide towards the inescapable chasm of death. I think the bigger fish to fry in this is Disney's completely unrealistic portrayal of fish as having the capacity to speak. And children are going to grow up thinking that fish can talk and therefore not eating fish and chips, which could decimate Britain's oldest industry.
I think you're right. I don't like the way some teapots and candlesticks have been portrayed either.
I never knew whether Goofy was a little dog or Mickey was a big mouse. So that was the problem. He was Mickey Mouse's dog. Mickey Mouse was half the size of this dog, and it was a retriever. And I was very young when I first saw this stuff, and then the duck came along. The duck was the same size as the mouse. It's very hard for a child. Everything's the same size.
I've been to Walt Disney World, Alan. Mickey Mouse is about 6'2". And we queued for an hour and 15 minutes when the kids were wee to get a photo opportunity with Mickey Mouse. And we got to the front of the queue and I said, come on then, stand beside Mickey. And all of them went, don't want to stand beside Mickey. I've been in this building nearly 2 hours. Stand beside Mickey! Come on, you're getting your photo taken and look like you're enjoying yourself. Right, it's Michael Jackson's house for you next.
Research by American academics suggests that children may be adversely affected by negative Disney portrayals of the elderly. 71% of Disney films contain at least one negative portrayal of an older character. And also they were upset by the terrible noises emanating from the elderly in Disney films. And I agree with that. Some of those Elton John songs are just terrible. Alan, who's picked to find time to withhold the fruits of their labour?
This is about fruit. This is about carbon-dated miles.
No, it's about fruit and the sort of fruit you might get at Wimbledon, for example.
Oh, it's about strawberries.
Is it about strawberries?
I have no idea.
Is it that there aren't enough people from Eastern Europe coming to pick the strawberries, so yep. Strawberries are going to go unpicked?
It is.
Bloody immigrants not coming over here, not taking our job.
Why we're there worried? We've got all those junior doctors who haven't got a job. The traditional summer pudding of strawberries and cream could be in short supply this year thanks to a lack of migrant workers to pick the fruits, and keen to make sure punters have something to eat, the organisers of Wimbledon have started bussing in students. Apparently they're an acquired taste, but a bit like chicken.
You just wonder what else students pick. I don't think I'd want the strawberries, really.
A supplementary question that you might know, Alan. Why is it getting
well,
harder?
Well, that's a bit condescending.
Why do you mean so?
Is it, how old are you?
At least I didn't say it very loud. All right, Alan.
What? Ian Paisley's about 84 or 85 or something. I didn't realise he was this old, but he'd be the same. He probably walks into rooms now and goes, what did I come in here for?
Reveal the final scores. Let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Mr. McCauley.
Thank you to Guy Robinson, somewhere near Grantham, who has sent in this about Filton Golf Club marked the scrapping of its rule banning Germans and Austrians by inviting Hugo Berger, whose grandparents were Austrian, to play a round. Members had voted in the rule in 1919 because of anger over the First World War and had forgotten about it. And just so that we, you know, can discard any notions of stereotyping, he was invited to play in lederhosen.
Just found this in this week's Daily Telegraph, the obituary column. Now, the first obituary is the sort of obituary you'd expect in the Daily Telegraph. Group Captain Stafford Cawthon, pilot who became a mentor to young motorcycle racers. And then underneath, Jörg Immendorf, artist who was highly regarded in Germany but got caught organising cocaine-fuelled orgies. And then underneath, there's a little picture of him, and then the caption is, Immendorf in 2003, when he hosted the Orgy of the Year. And the winner is...
Imagine if that had come on instead of Horse of the Year. Oh, there's been a refusal.
I'm so busy you taking part with Mylene Class. Right, Andy.
This is from Diana Timmins, who picked this out of the Daily Mail, from the conspiracy trial for the murder of the Earl of Shaftesbury. The article said, the court also heard from Riviera clairvoyant Martine Dupré-Cordiers, who the Earl had visited the day before his death to discover if his mistress was pregnant with his child. During the £35 consultation, she told him his divorce would go through smoothly and that happiness lay ahead. She admitted failing to foresee his death.
Sir Alan.
Well, I was drawn to this in Monday's Daily Telegraph. It says, a group of 15 Hampshire pensioners who've been trapped for 3 weeks on the top floor of their sheltered accommodation by a broken lift are still managing their daily dose of bingo by shouting from the windows. Warden Jill Dawkins, who does the bingo calling, stands in the garden shouting out the numbers while her assistant writes them down on big cards for the hard of hearing. If anyone on the top floor calls bingo, they send their cards down for checking in a basket attached to a washing line. Isn't the others carry on building a glider?
Right, let's take a look at the final scores. Fred and Mark have got 14, but this week's winners are Alan and Andy with 15 points. And before we leave you, here's a story seen on the BBC News website.
Two horses have been treated for injuries following an attack in the village of Little Summerford, Wiltshire. Police are appealing for information about the attack, which happened on Monday. Both animals are said to be in a stable condition.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Fred McCauley, Mark Steele, Andy Zoltzman, and Alan Foran. In the chair was Sandy Coxford, and the news was read by me, Corey Corporal. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Roger Brooks, and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Danielle Ward. And the producer was Ed Morris.